हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. This is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called Buddhi yoga. In other words, Buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. So the hearer sees that means intelligence here then will be in the active principle. We have it has two placements it can be put. We see in the position of Prajumna that it will be there as an aspect of Sambandha, and that you have knowledge of the field. Well, actually Shankarshan would also be aspect of knowledge, but Prajumna would be where the knowledge is there of the field and therefore you want to be involved with it. So when that's practically applied, then we see in Vasudev, then under the chit potency, that is also includes knowledge. So knowledge and action go together. This element of Buddhi yoga then means it's action, because like Prabhupada keeps mentioning in this word, his action is called Buddhi yoga. Takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Because you can be conscious of Krishna, but not be devotional. Right? Like the Patanjali yogis, they're conscious of Vishnu. They know he's the supreme person. They know he's an eternal person. So when they're in samadhi, they are fully Krishna conscious, but not in devotion. Right? So for us, when we say Krishna conscious, we mean in a devotional, active devotional mood. Right? But here they're being specific, because otherwise one can get distracted, right? Means like, you could also say, Kamsa, he was fully Krishna conscious. He never thought of anything other than Krishna, but it wasn't favorable, right? So devotional means, when it's favorable, that means it's devotional. So this favorable devotional service, then there'll be an action, right? You won't just sit there and just appreciate. Right? That's Shantaras. You do nothing. But you want to do something active. Right? So then it's here. So his action is called Buddhi Yoga. Right? When one tries to go back home, so try infers some action is there, some endeavor is there. So that endeavor to try to go back to Godhead, that action itself, that is Buddhi Yoga. Okay? Is that clear? Like that. So this is very important to understand that it's a combination, right? In other words, there is the mundane concept. Well, let's say mundane concept. Let us say there is the element of the tattva of the different kinds of yoga, right? So you have karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and bhakti yoga, okay? So then in this order, then each one is becoming in a more elevated position than the last. But there is also another aspect, is that in application of this, all these four combined together, right, for the purpose of bhakti yoga, that is called buddhi yoga, right? So now within this buddhi yoga, you may be progressing through these stages, but it's still a combination of all four. It's not that it's one exclusive, then the other. That's very easy. It makes it easy to understand. But in factual application, it doesn't work like that. Right? So the point is you're, when the focus in Buddha Yoga is on your action, right? What activity you're performing, trying to become expert at that, trying to deal in such a way that the activity itself is nicely connected to Krishna, that's karma yoga. Right, but it's still classified as bhakti yoga. In Prabhupada's Vairagya Vidya, or what do you call it? Wisdom of renunciation. I think that's the translation. Renunciation through wisdom. Then, in there, one of the chapters, I think the third chapter, is all about karma yoga. Like that. The original word is karma yoga. He never uses any other word. Right? I think in the English translation, they've used bhakti yoga there throughout. Because at the time when it was translated, devotees were not very familiar with these, all these different terms are synonyms. Right? So the karma yoga, the bhakti, is the same. Right? So that infers this element is that when this is being done, this action in Krishna consciousness means you're using your intelligence. It's not based on pure prema. Right? There you don't have to worry about intelligence. There it's a matter of that affection for Krishna is so full that everything you do is going to be connected to Krishna. But before that happens, you have to use your brains. Right? So then when the emphasis is on that activity, it's still buddhi yoga, or it's still classified as generically bhakti yoga. But in technical, it's buddhi yoga, and within buddhi yoga, the emphasis is on karma yoga, right? When one understands that the fruits of this are not for me, the intellectual understanding of it, the knowledge of the action and how it functions, and the detachment from the result, that means then the person in buddhi yoga is working predominantly more in jnana yoga, right? Then when that absorption becomes very complete, and it's not so much the detachment from the material world, but the absorption in Krishna that becomes more prominent, that's dhyana yoga. Though externally it's going to look the same. Right? So, because that external form is always the 64 items of devotional service. Right? Remembering Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, you have 64 items of devotional service. You can follow that according to Vaidhi or Rag. Right? But when they come also to the Uttam platform, they're still performing the same activities. Right? They still have the spiritual master. They're still in the Dham. Tulsi is there. Right? They're doing things favorable for Krishna. The same activities are still there. They don't really change. Right? So then we can see is that this form of buddhi yoga, whether you're doing karma, jnana, or dhyana yoga, basically the form doesn't change. Because it's still the 64 items. It's still sadhana bhakti. Right? Then when that comes to the perfectional stage, right, you come to prema, then that would be just bhakti yoga. Right? There's no other elements in there. So that then we call, but then at that stage we call it prema, right? It's not buddhi yoga anymore. Does that make sense? Yes? So it's important to understand that there's a ladder that's going through, but the whole process together, it's not you one and then you leave that and then there's the next and leave that, then there's the next. That's very simplistic. No, they're all going on at once. Because Krishna is always saying to Arjuna, perform your duties, karma yoga, in knowledge, jnana yoga, remembering me, dhyana yoga, and doing the activity to please me, right? That is bhakti yoga. Right? Again and again, he's saying this through the Gita, like 20, 30 times, right? That's Buddha yoga, that combination. Now, which part you're emphasizing more, then that will make the difference between them. Right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay, some question you had? No? Okay. No question on this? Is that clear? So in other words, this yoga ladder is simultaneously there in a progression, but you're dealing with all of them at once. Right? Mother Jashoda is performing activity, but that's not where her consciousness is. Right? Your consciousness is fully absorbed in Krishna, so she's on the platform of prema. Right? But she performs perfect activities with the proper understanding of how to do the activities. The activities are being done completely for Krishna. There's no fruit of element of it at all. She's always remembering Krishna. So all the four aspects of the yoga is there. In other words, we can understand that all these four aspects, this actually is bhakti yoga. Right? That is followed by one on the platform of prema. Right? The jiva in its natural position as servant of Krishna. That's how it behaves. Right? Does that make sense? That's natural. But because people aren't on that platform, then this process that's perfectly mixed together, you know, in its proper balance, then is analytically broken apart into four stages so that one can find some way to connect the body, mind, and words to Krishna. Does that make sense? Therefore, we think karma yoga is separate, jnana yoga is separate, dhyana yoga is separate. Right? Like sometimes devotees will be talking bad about, you know, karma mistra bhakti. But the point is you got something else that you're going to use? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So karma mistra bhakti as an end, that's a problem. Right? And if the karma is too much mixed where the fruit of element comes in, that's bad. Right? So in other words, when we say karma miss your bhakti, that generally infers that the element of fruitiveness of that action, that's the predominant element, or that's very important. But karma itself, or action itself, that's not a problem. So karma yoga is not a problem. Karma mistra bhakti means that your fruitive intent is very prominent in your karma yoga. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to distinguish these, just because they use the same term. Right? Karma means action. Right? So you can say Mother Jashoda is performing karma. Why? She's getting up, you know, cooking in the kitchen, arranging Krishna's bath, making his clothes, dressing him, ornaments, all that. That's karma. Meaning action. Right? But it's spiritual, it's transcendental, it's purely in devotional service. So it's just part of bhakti, it's not a separate thing. When one performs these activities without Krishna, then they take on this separate nomenclature, right? The separate names and identities. Is this clear? The important thing is to be able to work with the same terms on all these different levels. Otherwise, then you'll have a problem that over semantics, you either won't understand parts of the philosophy, or you'll sit and argue for hours with another devotee over something, and then find out you're talking exactly the same thing. I've had this happen quite a few times. Now I don't really have the time for that, but as brahmacharis, right, you know, so much time is there, I sit around in the veranda in the evening, right, when you should be going to bed, and talking all kinds of things, hours and hours arguing over something, because you're so stuck on your definition of the word. Then after you said, no, but I meant that, and then after 3 hours you find out you're talking exactly the same thing, right? That's all. Just that you chose a different one of the Krishna conscious vocabulary to mean this, and it has absolutely nothing to do with that. And they had done, you know, the same thing in the opposite. And so therefore,
according to the modes of nature, you were meant to not sleep so much that night, and so therefore the two of you were brought together for this interesting conversation. Right? Does that make sense? So much of the time, things in devotional service get misunderstood or misconstrued because of these common elements of the vocabulary. Because the point is if it's done for Krishna, then it's just devotional service. Service means action, right? If it's in pursuance of devotional service, then it's action in Krishna consciousness. It's buddhi yoga, right? If the point is that you're performing the activity, but the results you're getting are more important than the devotional aspect, that's called karma misra bhakti. If there's no devotional element at all, it's just called karma. Right? If it's connected with shastras for an elevating thing, so even the jnanis and that, it's karma yoga still, but it's still not what we'd call karma yoga. Right? And then it's just karma. Right? Action and reaction. You do something, you get a reaction. So in the spiritual platform, they do an action, and the reaction is Krishna's happy. Does that make sense? So their service then results in Krishna's happiness. So therefore, according to the definition of action-reaction, it's the same process. But the difference is in the process. One is in pure devotion, one is in pursuance of pure devotion, and one is just mundane. But the principle of action is the same. You'll do an action to get a result. The karmi does the fruit of worker does the action to get his material result for his happiness. The sadhaka performs the action in pursuance of that it will result in Krishna's happiness. He'll come to the devotional platform. The perfected devotees, they're already performing the activities simply, and their activities are pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? So this principle of action and reaction is the same. So the word karma is used on all these levels. But when it's used on these different levels, many times the definition of it will change. How we'll use the word or the context we'll use the word. Does that make sense? So it's important because as followers of Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, we have to be able to accommodate that contradicting definitions actually are not contradicting. It's just we're looking at too low of a detail to understand the commonality. Right? Because ultimately, there's Krishna. So that means all things that are within the cosmic creation are all coming from Him. So ultimately, there's no contradiction in anything in the cosmic creation. Does that make sense? Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Maharaji, someone is performing karma yoga, but the purpose is not Krishna consciousness. Is that also buddhi yoga?
If they're performing karma yoga, but their purpose is not Krishna consciousness, well, what would their purpose be?
You know, attaining Brahman realization.
Attaining Brahman realization. They might use it, but we wouldn't call it, because we're defining buddhi yoga as action in Krishna consciousness. But it might be that the impersonalists also define it that way. I haven't heard them use the term. I've heard them use the term of Naishkang or Nishkang Karma Yoga. They use this term Nishkam Karma Yoga coming out their ears. Right? They're always recommending that the common person, in other words, the non-intellectual, you know, just the common mass that they preach to, that they perform Nishkam Karma Yoga. So they're always telling them that you perform your duties according to Varnashram, but do it without attachment. That will bring you to the platform of Gyan. Then when you come to the platform of Gyan, then you're one of them. So that's the method, is that karma performed with, detachment automatically becomes knowledge. Does that make sense? So by performing, means if you perform karma, you know, then it will remain in the realm of karma. But if karma is done with detachment, it will move one to the platform of jnana. That's just the way it works. So that's their recommendation. That's basically all they preach. They'll even say, do bhakti yoga, because they consider it a kind of karma. But do it with detachment, so then that will bring you to jnana. Because if you do it with faith, then you'll go back to Godhead, which is not what they want. you know, they'll consider that they, you know, I don't know what we're wrong. They went off track. They went back to Godhead. I guess they, you know, I consider you bloop going up, you know, instead of down or something. Is that okay? Does this make sense? Because so it's just made clear so we have a finer understanding of this yoga ladder, right? Because it's a yoga ladder, but you have to remember it's one ladder. It's not four different ladders. It's different rungs on the same ladder. So the whole ladder, that's devotional service. Yes. May not understand. No, you would understand Krishna's the goal. Otherwise, it wouldn't be part of Buddha Yoga. Because you see in the third, fourth chapters that Krishna's talking about it. He's just talking about it in relation to Krishna consciousness. You know, you have karma, the path of karma and the path of jnana. So a karmi and a jnani, they're one who performs action or has knowledge without any connection to Krishna. But someone who has that connection to Krishna, then their action is karma yoga and their knowledge is jnana yoga. No, they're not like that. The it means, because yoga means you're connecting it with something. So therefore for us that means you're connecting to the Supreme. So then when we use these terminologies, then it will mean that the actions of karma and jnana are connected to Krishna. And if we say karma misra or jnana misra, it means that our performance of karma yoga has too much fruit of activity in it, therefore karma misra. Or our jnana yoga has too much jnana in it. We're too worried about the knowledge as opposed to the using it as a tool for the devotion, therefore it's jnana misra. You see? But we're still, so that's just a further definition within karma yoga or jnana yoga. You know what I'm saying? How the impersonalists use all these terms is not so important for us. Like that. Does that make sense? That's why we're going through all this, is because some people make it into clear, nice little computer little box things with arrows. And it's not. It's a ladder. It's one thing. You know? The point is also, if you notice, who climbs a ladder between the rungs? Right? So even if you're at the bottom of the ladder, you can still see the top of the ladder, but the point is you're at the bottom of the ladder. So you can see bhakti, but you're on the platform of karma. You're on that rung. Or you're on the platform of jnana, on that rung. Or on the platform of jnana, right? So jnana yoga, basically, because we see the definition that's being there is, what is it, yoga ruruksu? That's it? Yeah, so that means you're only dealing with jnana and samadhi. So that is what we would call bhava bhakti. Does that make sense? So then technically even the jnana yoga, the knowledge is not the prominent element at all. Because the metaphysics in that aren't necessary in bhakti and in bhava bhakti. Right? So yeah. But still, it's still not on the perfectional stage. Until you get to prema, it's not prema. Right? It's just the way it goes. Right?
Practical application of this verse, tektva sadharmam charanam bhajamare. So in the preaching application aspect of it, one place it is said, do not disturb a person who is offering his results to Krishna. At the same time, this verse is where Narada is saying this, even though he is really unqualified, apakva, still put him into pure devotional service. Even though he falls to no problem, how do we really understand this kind of verse? Because Prabhupada quotes a verse in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the very first
few verses where Krishna is saying that Naishkarmya, you just have to, even just by taking sannyas, you will not achieve perfection. So you have to work. In the purport, Prabhupada quotes this verse.
Mm-hmm.
So while giving a class on it or explaining this, it was very difficult. So how do we...
And the point is that, well, one is, what is your definition of pure devotee?
One who practices nine forms of devotional services.
Okay. But what platform are they on? Kanista, Madhyam, Uttam, what's a pure devotee means what?
One who is practicing these nine principles.
Okay, but within the realm of Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam, where does it fall?
Kanishtha is also a pure devotee if he's practicing this principle.
If he's practicing. Now we see, what's his name? Okay, so then what's the problem? Do neophytes fall down?
Yeah.
So then what's your problem?
If this comes into like somebody is in a situation where he's working, he's having...
So that's the point. I'm saying the point is you're saying it's a confusion. But if you're taking pure devotee to be broad enough that someone who's practicing, you know, bona fide Krishna consciousness, and then you're saying even if they fall down, so it's confusing. But what's so confusing? It means in your yatra, no one's ever gone away. Nothing's ever happened. No one's ever kind of like not been so engaged in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so then why is there a confusion?
Confusion because, like, some people would say that, you know, if we had not, like, really given it this active work, mostly outside, and then he would have been better outside the ashram. That's what some people tell me.
He would have been better, meaning? What is he would have been better means?
That person would have been better performing emotional service outside.
Uh huh. So what's the problem with that? Why is that confusing?
So then people say that, why are you asking people to join ashram?
What has that got to do with reality? You know what I'm saying? Means, does everybody who joins the school pass? No, so therefore, then according to that logic, why does anyone recommend that anybody gets educated? Okay? You know what I'm saying? You know, children never die, so therefore all women should be recommended never to have children. You know, marriages break up, no one should ever get married. I mean, what is this logic? All it is people who, they themselves can't live in the ashram, can't relate to it, therefore they think the whole world shouldn't be, because that's how their mentality is. So there's that. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? Okay. Yes?
Like you were saying, to answer the question Mataji was asking, now they are explaining Bhakti Shastri. Or this yoga ladder, like we see also in chapter 6, Krishna is explaining Dhyana Yoga,
mm-hmm.
and he explained up to the realization of the Paramatma.
Mm-hmm.
And also in chapter 5, actually in Krishna consciousness, he's explaining also about Nishkama Karma Yoga,
mm-hmm.
and he explained also to giving the example of Pandita Samadashina.
Mm-hmm.
So, if it's the same ladder, then how is it that it's divided in this way? In Dhyana Yoga, Krishna explained the full process of Dhyana Yoga to lead to realization of Paramatma,
mm-hmm.
and engaging, then development of Krishna. And separately, Krishna is explaining also Bhakti Yoga in another aspect also. I want you always to...
Because the one is that in the Ashtanga Yoga system, where does the Bhakti start? That's also explained. Where does it start? Samadhi. After you've actually seen Paramatma directly, you're completely liberated. Then seeing Paramatma, and then you decide, this is a nice guy, you know, so I want to serve him. Then they take up Bhakti Yoga. But because they're liberated, their position of taking up bhakti yoga, they don't have to get through all the anarthas of conditioned nature. So bang, they're immediately on the same platform as someone else who has come up through the process of devotional service and gotten to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, right? So they'll be at the same point. Therefore, you see the devotee and the yogi are on the same platform. That's the picture, right? That's why it said is that's why it's divided between yoga arudha and yoga ruruksu, right? So yoga arudha, those six levels, that is just how you get yourself to the point of dhyan. So Astanga has its method. We have our own method. So that's the difference. It's not imbued with any devotion. Only at dhyan do they start meditating on Vishnu. Up to that point, dharana simply means you focus on one spot. The example is given like when you pour honey or oil. It's very wide at the mouth. It goes very thin. So it's wherever the mind may be, you bring it to one point. When you have it focused on one point, then you put paramatma. So until dhyan, we don't even consider the processes as important for us. The elements of you have things to do, not do, how you properly situate yourself, how you engage your energies, your life force, you know, like that, pulling in the senses, like that, focusing then, you know, only in Krishna consciousness, that's the same, but we're having it connected with Krishna at every stage. Therefore, that's karma yoga or jnana yoga, right? So following the rules and all that, getting yourself, so yama, niyama, asana, like that, pranayama, this is all like your karma yoga, like that. But if pranayama, then you have the element of what kind of prana, what kind of action you're performing, right? Right? Then what's the next one? Pratyahara. You pull in the senses. Now that means you have to be, if you're pulling it in, means you're not doing it for a fruit of work. So now you're entering into the jnana aspect. Right? It's the same stages, just they have different names for it. Right? And then dharana, you're focusing just on Krishna. It's only for Krishna, nothing else. It's for Krishna, it's not for me. Right, then you get to the yoga rukshu. So then now you're meditating on Krishna, and then that becomes full absorption. So the dhyan, so of the system, the dhyan and the samadhi are the same for them and us, just that we know who Krishna is, and they are, you know, just getting to know him. But the yoga rukshu, is that? No, which was, I can't remember which one's which. Which, the beginning six? Yoga Arudha. So the Yoga Arudha, we have our process, they have theirs. But it's in the same categories. Just the detail of application is different. We situate ourselves in Krishna consciousness. So we're in the ashram or this or that. They're sitting themselves under a tree in some yoga posture. Like that. But it's the same process, just it takes on these different forms. That's the mistake, is we think everything's actually completely different stuff, but there's actually the formulas for everything that works in the cosmic creation is the same. It's just this application, if it's connected to Krishna or not, or that degree it's connected, like that. So then it's actually the same thing. So they also go through these stages, but they only get up to jnana yoga, and that's where it ends. Patanjali doesn't talk beyond that. But those who come to that stage knowing the process, in other words, like in the Satya Yuga, they follow this process, but many of them only, as Patanjali gives, know it's Paramatma. So then they want to merge. But others that come in Vaishnava lines know he's Krishna, he's Bhagavan. So they are devotees who follow the Astanga Yoga system to get to that platform. Of course, you need 60,000 years, or at least 10,000 to get there. So time's a little short these days, so it's not very practical. Right? So then it works in the same means. So therefore, for us, we use a much better method. So in that Yoga Arudha, we have our own method that's much quicker. Right? Just in a few years, we can get to that platform of Yoga Arudha. While for them, you're talking 10,000 years. You know. So it's just a matter of understanding that all these things go on. That's why, like in the evening class, you have this thing where you're breaking down technically the philosophy so one can understand these things, understand what a Chintabheda-Veda Tattva is. Because if you can accommodate two things that don't seem to make sense and they make sense, then you can understand our philosophy. Right? Like that. The fine points. You know, the other points, you know, it's not a problem. The principles of them are very straightforward. But the problem is when you apply these principles, then the details may seem contradictory. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Is that, yes. Uttama Bhakti and being free from karma and jnana. The element of being free from karma and jnana, you're doing that through the whole process. So at some point, one becomes completely free of that. So here is that we're talking about bhakti, but here he's saying uttama bhakti. So because for us, bhakti means pure, unalloyed devotional service. We're not just interested in just bhakti itself, you know, lower than that. In other words, just prema itself, we set that as a goal because that's as far as you can get in this body. But actually, we're thinking generally quite a few stages past prema, right? In other words, love of God has 10 levels, right? Starting from bhava as the bud up to mahabhava. So prema at the second level, that's as far as this body can handle. So, and the overall, all 10 are called prema. Right? So we mean, when we say prema, it can mean either that stage of prema as the second level, or it can mean the whole thing, wherever is your natural position. Right? So within that, we're only interested in pure unalloyed, because prema can also be used in the Vaikuntha understanding, in Dasya Ras, you know, in Vaikuntha. So there you're not dealing with pure unalloyed, because they have interests. It's spiritual interests, because spiritual means non-material, right? So their liberation means it's not material. So they have desires to be on the same planet, or same form, or same opulence, or be a close associate, any of these kind of things. So that forms of liberation, then they have. So it's not unalloyed, because something else is there. Like that. So that's why we say uttama bhakti means even that's there. It's just a matter of, it means the verse aslishiva padatitam pinashtumam. It's just whatever you want, that's what we want. If it makes you happy that we're unhappy, then that's our highest happiness. Right? So here you're dealing on your pure devotional emotion. So it may make sense, may not make sense, but you know, that's the sentiments. So that's one aspect, okay? So the free from karma and jnana. The other aspect of karma and jnana has to be free is within the realm of bhav sadhana. It's not so much of a problem now, but when you get there is that having been conditioned, there is elements of the flavor of the conditioning remains, even though one is liberated, right? So what one has to be very careful is of the elements that I'm an advanced devotee, like that, or I am a devotee of Krishna, like that. Because technically that's why Nectar Devotion makes very clearly the point, technically there's only one devotee in the cosmic creation, and that's Radharani. Everyone else is her servant, right? Because if you think you're the devotee, so it's just like if I think I'm God, that's a problem. But if I think I'm the devotee, that's also a problem. They're both impersonalist, right? They both have a problem. So those subtle points, right, those must also be given up. Otherwise, one can't progress and get to the point of samadhi. You know what I'm saying? Because the other one is this, they get to the platform of samadhi because they're just meditating on super soul. They have no devotion. It's just they have a determination. They have another goal they're trying to get to, and they're going to get to it by meditating on Paramatma. But for us, that service and pleasure of Bhagavan, that's what we're trying to get to. Right? So that's samadhi and Bhagavan platform. That then, if there's anything else, there will be distraction. Right? Because for the yogi, one may say, well, yogi never gets distracted because the yogi is just only, he's only dealing there's no spiritual variety other than God, right? There's nothing. And then the only thing spiritual is God, right? But someone on the platform of bhava, everything he's dealing with is spiritual, right? The cow dung that he's putting on the walls is spiritual. You know, the pots that he's cooking with is spiritual, So everything's spiritual. So there's plenty of spiritual stuff to get distracted by. So within spiritual, you have to be focused on Krishna. And that's it. So that's why this Bhagavan Samadhi that's in Baba Bhakti is more developed than the Samadhi of Paramatma realization. You know, just like someone on the Brahman platform, they're technically, you could say, in Samadhi on the Brahman platform, like Sukadeva Goswami or these, they're on the Brahman platform. Right? Then when they come in contact with higher forms of Samadhi, they can recognize it. Because they already know, I'm in Samadhi on the Brahman platform. And, you know, so the senses don't become disturbed by anything here. So how is it that I'm attracted by the smell of this person's feet? Right? Then they can understand that this is a higher realm of Samadhi. Therefore, then they take up devotion. Does that make sense? Right. So that's a very difficult way to do it. It means you can do it, but it's recommended that you take up this, make this distinction from the very beginning. When you're starting with Shraddha, at that point you make the distinction, you know, about Krishna, Paramatma, and Brahman, and you understand that Krishna is who you're trying to obtain to. So then as you go through, when you get to that stage, it's complete. But it's been much more smooth. It wasn't that you were top, you know, impersonalist, and then you come in, by fortune, come in contact with the Lord, and then you become a devotee. You know, that's too tricky. You know, very difficult, and too many distractions. Because factually, if we, you know, we talk about the impersonalist could do this and that, but actually, how many impersonalists do we ever say ever became God conscious? Right? Two. Right? Sukadeva Goswami and the Four Kumaras. We don't talk about anybody else. So that's the point. That so it's not recommended as a path, you know, unless you really want to be the Four Kumaras or something. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You had something?
Yes. A person who is practicing karma yoga does not need to go to jnana yoga and dhyana yoga to attain Krishna.
He does not. It means you're asking or you're making a statement?
It's a comment.
It's a comment. And so how would that comment work? How would this karma yoga that you're talking about work that he does not need to go to? To jnana yoga or dhyana yoga to get to bhakti yoga.
This means that the person who is practicing buddhi yoga that...
But you said buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga is the combination of intelligence and that, so it's not just karma yoga. So
yes.
You've just ruined your definition here.
If
you know what I'm saying? In other words, if you want to step into this arena, this is how you're dealt with. You know what I'm saying? If you want to bring up a contradictory point, it's fine. But it means, if you're wrong, you'll be cut to shreds in front of all these people. You know what I'm saying? You've already ruined your definition of karma yoga by saying in buddhi yoga. Because buddhi yoga means knowledge is there. So that means the element of jnana yoga is included. Though your predominance is karma yoga. But karma yoga means you're not dealing with the aspect of jnana.
Yes, you're dealing with the aspect of
jnana. Then it's buddhi yoga, it's not karma yoga. So you could say, within buddhi yoga, someone who basically focuses on karma yoga, that aspect of that could come to the platform of bhakti, because his heart and his emotions are just fixed on Krishna, and he wants to do work for Krishna, and he's only absorbed in Krishna. But because he's absorbed in Krishna, he's detached from actually the karmas. That puts him technically in the platform of the jnana yoga. Because jnana yoga is karma yoga where there is no attachment. Then it becomes jnana yoga. It just automatically transforms. That's why you don't really make such a distinction between all the different aspects of buddhi yoga. It's simply made so that you know that there are aspects so you can see your intelligence and your activities and your mind is fully absorbed in Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's just like when you're cooking, you don't make that much distinction between when you're making the chaans or when you're putting in other spices or when you're boiling it or, you know, when you're garnishing it. It's just part of the cooking process. But so that someone who does not know this, therefore you focus on, now is the chaans. So therefore, these are all the aspects of the chaans. Now we're stir-frying the vegetables. This is what you're looking for there. But the chaans is still in those vegetables. Right? Now we're putting water and boiling it. But the spices are still there and the fried aspect that was there is all happening. Right? And now here's your final subject. You know what I'm saying? They're mixed. Does that make sense?
Yes. But what I'm trying to say is that karma yoga can bring you to Krishna.
Yes, but you mentioned knowledge, so that means those other aspects are inherent in it.
Of course, because when you attain Krishna, then knowledge, jnana and vairagya automatically...
Yes, so then what's your problem? That's why we call it buddhi yoga. Karma yoga has all those other aspects in it, therefore it's complete. Jnana yoga has all those other aspects in it.
Yeah, but the person who is practicing is approaching from jnana or karma yoga position.
Yes.
So that's why he's called jnana yogi or karma yogi.
Yes.
Not because of his internal understanding of devotional service.
Yes, but if his internal understanding of devotional service, why would you call him a karma yogi? If he's a karma yogi, that he's working in pure devotion, why would you call him a karma yogi?
Just because he's approaching from that perspective. He's working, but internally he's fixed. On
yes.
the outside, he looks like karma yogi. That's why.
What is the point of this whole discussion? What is your point?
The goal is the same. And...
Okay, but why would you want to make this point?
The position.
No, why would you want to make this point? Was there some lack in what we discussed that you would feel that you have to make this point?
Yes.
What was that lack?
What Mataji asked about, and then that there is, you explained that the person develops and the aspects of jnana yoga, they come to person's life when he's practicing, proceeding jnana, and then...
So you're saying the person doing karma would not be thinking of Krishna?
Yes, yes.
So that aspect is not what we call jnana yoga?
Of course.
So then what's the difference in what you're saying?
The jnana yogi approaches.
But that's the jnana yogi, but we're not talking about... That wasn't what we were saying. We're saying is that bhakti yoga means the process of bhakti yoga. Then for us, because we're sadhakas, we're trying to perfect it. Therefore, it's called buddhi yoga because we're using our intelligence. And this buddhi yoga is the combination of all these four kinds of yoga. Right? But it's actually just bhakti yoga. That's why we can say someone's a karma yogi or a jnana yogi or a jnana yogi, and we mean a devotee. But that's our definition. Others separate it off. They try to make it, you know, be more in the non-devotional element. Does that make sense? Okay. Was that unclear to everyone?
Huh?
It was clear, okay. So then better in these stages is to ask rather than proclaim a statement, because the others understood it before. So if you weren't clear on it, then better is to ask, you know what I'm saying, rather than make a statement. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise then your definitions in your statement were contradictory. Because you were already included, you were taking karma yoga as the central feature that included the aspects of knowledge about Krishna and the service, that detachment from it, that absorption in Krishna and the devotional element, which you can do. But the point is the focus is on the karma. but all four are combined, that's why we call it Buddha Yoga. But he may be predominantly practicing within the sphere of karma, or practicing within the sphere of jnana or dhyana, depending upon what is their conditioning, where they're coming from. No? No. What don't you understand? Okay. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's an etiquette. Does that make sense? So pariprashna means you inquire. Because otherwise, if you make a statement, a thesis, you know, like that, then you throw it into the realm of nyaya. Right? Which means then there's an argument. You said this, but I say this, so then that's an argument. You said this, I don't quite understand it, because it appears that someone who comes in from this level is still performing bhakti yoga. And so wouldn't that just be karma yoga, therefore you can bring you to the perfectional platform? That's a question. That enhances the conversation. That's why I ask, is it a question or a statement? Because if it's a question, you deal with it one way. But if it's a statement, you deal with it a different way. Does that make sense? So in this kind of assembly, this is for those who want to ask a question. Not for, if you have a statement, then you meet with us personally. That's the etiquette. You know, unless you just want to come in here and that's how you get your fun. Just coming into assemblies and just creating an argument. You know what I'm saying? But that's not very cultured, not in the sphere of Vaishnavas. That's jnanis do that. That's their whole life. You know, that's how they get their juice. You know what I'm saying? But we're devotees, so that's not how we do. So therefore, pranipata pariprashna and sevaya. So pariprashna means then, therefore, even if we have a different idea, we ask it in the form of a question. Like Krishna just told Arjuna everything in the second chapter, and he says what you say is contradictory. I don't understand it. It sounds contradictory. Can you please explain it further? So the contradiction goes away. Because it appears you said this and this. He didn't say, oh, you're contradictory, and then what you said is... No, he just says, you've said it, how I've understood it, it's a contradiction. Please explain further so that it goes away. So then he breaks it down. Then he breaks it into karma yoga, jnana yoga, then combines them in the fifth chapter as the buddhi yoga. Right? And because the element of jnana is not prominent in jnana yoga, therefore you could define buddhi yoga already completely, even though it includes jnana yoga, before you got to jnana. Because someone on the platform of jnana yoga then does not need karma, right, or jnana in his activity, because that's here he's not engaged in it. But in the spiritual world, he's still using transcendental knowledge and transcendental activity to perform perfect his service. But it's just a matter of the definition. He walks, but he does not walk. Right? He walks in the spiritual platform, but in the material platform, he doesn't walk. So it's just depending upon where you're defining this. Does that make sense? Kind of. Okay. We'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Brinda ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandi. We'll move and then we can say this.
Short announcement. For those devotees who are registered, well, tomorrow, straight after class, we'll have a short meeting. 10 minutes. Just get ready to come. Thank you. Thank you.
The point is, in Guru Yoga, you're feeling